With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Everyone here is mad.
Greetings, and you are listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I am your host, Tracy Savage. Let's start tonight off with a little mood music.
Such a lonely day, and it's mine, the most loneliest day of my life. Such a lonely day should be banned. It's a day that I can't stand. The most loneliest day of my life. The most loneliest day of my life. Such a lonely day shouldn't exist. It's a day that I'll never miss. Such a lonely day, and it's mine, the most loneliest day of my life. And if you go, I wanna go with you. And if you die, I wanna die with you. Take your hand and walk away. The most loneliest day of my life. The most loneliest day of my life. Such a lonely day, and it's mine. It's a day that I'm glad I survived.
Presentation is a science fiction short story, which was originally broadcast on X-1, and we have had a couple presentations from X-1 previously. They were half-hour science fiction radio dramas. The series broadcast from 1955 to 1958 in various time slots on NBC. Initially, it was a revival of NBC's Dimension X, which you might be more familiar with, which ran 1950 to 1951. And the first 15 episodes of X-1 were new versions of Dimension X episodes, but the remainder were adaptations by NBC staff writers, including Ernest Kenoy and George Leffert, two big names, of newly published science fiction stories by leading writers in the field, including Isaac Asimov, Ray Bradbury, Philip K. Dick, Robert A. Heinlein, Frederick Pohl, and Theodore Sturgeon, along with some original scripts by Kenoy and Leffert also. Now, that last one, Theodore Sturgeon, is the one that we are going to be focusing on this evening, and his short story titled A Saucer of Loneliness. This short story first appeared in Galaxy Magazine in February 1953. It was later adapted as a radio play for X-1 in 57, and as the second segment of the 25th episode, which was the first episode of the second season, which ran 86 to 87 of the TV series The Twilight Zone. Now, this short story is told from the point of view of a man who rescues a would-be suicide at the seashore. The unnamed woman tells her story reluctantly. She had heard and understood a message from a flying saucer, which she refused to reveal the message, and she was imprisoned, rejected, and ridiculed, but she still would not say what the alien spaceship had told her. In 2004, A Saucer of Loneliness was nominated for a Retro Hugo for a short story, 1954, which would be the Hugo Award for Best Short Story. It was also the title of the seventh book in the anthology series, The Collected Short Stories of Theodore Sturgeon, published in 2000. And there is a connection from Theodore Sturgeon to none other than author Kurt Vonnegut. He had created Kilgore Trout as a fictionalized version of the author Theodore Sturgeon, which was Vonnegut's colleague in the genre of science fiction. And some people actually had said that Trout's consistent presence in Vonnegut's works have led some critics to see him as an author's own alter ego. But in 57, the backstory is that Theodore Sturgeon had moved to Truro, Massachusetts, where he befriended Vonnegut, then working as a salesman in a Saab dealership. And at the time, both were writing in the genre of science fiction. Vonnegut had already published Player Piano, retitled Utopia 14 in paperback. By the time of Kilgore Trout's first appearance in God Bless You, Mr. Rosewater, both had moved to different cities. Vonnegut had begun to be perceived as a mainstream author. And the name, of course, was a transparent reference to the older writer substituting Kilgore for Theodore and Trout for Sturgeon. You can see the, you know, correlation there with the names. But since the characterization was less than flattering, both Sturgeon and Trout were financially unsuccessful and seemingly slipping into obscurity, unfortunately. Vonnegut did not publicly state the connection, nor did Sturgeon encourage the comparison, of course. It was not until after Sturgeon's death in 1985 that Vonnegut explicitly acknowledged the matter, stating in a 1987 interview that, yeah, it said so in his obituary in the New York Times. I was delighted that it said in the middle of it that he was the inspiration for the Kurt Vonnegut character of Kilgore Trout, unquote. So we're going to begin our presentation here of A Saucer of Loneliness by Theodore Sturgeon, and afterwards a little bit about the Twilight Zone episode. So hope you enjoy.
Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X minus one.
Tonight, the time is June 25th, 1962. The place, a lonely beach. The story, Saucer of Loneliness by Theodore Sturgeon.
My name is Jason Berniades. I'm a newspaper reporter, 31 years old. I write poetry, but I don't show it to anybody because they might laugh. And the things I write about are very important to me. I was an only child. I never went with girls much because I'm too ugly and too sensitive. And they used to hurt me. I live alone. It isn't much fun. I'm not painting this picture of myself to get sympathy. I don't need it. But it's important that you should know the kind of person I am. Otherwise, you won't understand what I'm going to tell you. It happened tonight, the thing I'm going to tell you about. Tonight, the 25th of June, 1962. I was down on the beach.
Hey, mister! Hey, mister!
What is it, kid?
You seen a cop around any place?
On this beach?
I found this pile of clothes down near the rocks, a lady's dress and shoes.
Well, did you see anybody? A girl?
Well, I think so, but she was running along the sand in the moonlight. I yelled to her, but she just kept running, and then I found these.
Look, kid, you go try to find a cop someplace. I'll see if I can find the girl.
Okay.
I thought to myself, she's dead. I'll never find her now in this white flood of moonlight with the surf seething in over the pale sand. I ran and ran until my knees buckled and went down in the swirl of it. The sea on my lips, with the taste of tears, and the whole white night shouted and wept. And then I saw her, waist deep, walking into the surf.
Stop. Stop it. Come back. Come on, come out.
Let go. Let me go.
Don't do it. Please don't.
Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
I'm going to have to hit you. Forgive me.
I hit her in the neck with the edge of my hand, and she slumped. I brought her ashore and carried her to where a dune was between us and the water. Then I rubbed her wrists. She had a pale, beautiful face with ancient, bottomless blue eyes. She opened them and looked at me after a moment. It's all right. Here, put my coat over you.
Why couldn't you leave me alone?
I couldn't.
Why?
Because it's important to me.
I suppose you want to know why I did it.
If I told you I understand, would you believe me?
How could you understand?
Maybe I know what it means to be lonely.
That.
That's it, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm so terribly tired.
Put your head against my arm and just stay. Don't be afraid. I've been looking for you for a long time.
Looking for me?
All my life.
How did you know? I don't believe you.
It's true. I found your message.
Oh?
So you see, there's nothing to be afraid of. Not anymore. Just rest. The moonlight is terribly white.
Yes. I'd like to rest for a while.
She didn't remember it, of course. But I was one of the reporters who had covered the story when it first happened, 5 years ago. I'll never forget that day. I was working the police blotter. It was a quiet summer afternoon when they brought her in. Two big cops in blue uniforms.
Come on now, girlie, come on.
Let me go. I haven't done anything.
Take it easy now.
What's the trouble, Connolly?
Disturbing the peace, Sergeant.
Is this that Central Park call?
Hey, this is it.
I thought you radioed that there was a near riot up there.
Oh, you should have seen the place.
All right, give me the report.
Well, me and Bennett got up there, and there was a mob of people all surrounding this girl, see? So we bust through, and there in the middle of maybe 600 people She's lying there, sort of in a faint. I asked a couple of people what the difficulty was, and they tell me it's the flying saucer.
The what?
The flying saucer.
What flying saucer?
Let me finish, Sergeant. What flying saucer, I ask. And then they says that this girl was standing on the green, and suddenly the saucer comes down and starts whirring over her head like a halo.
What is this, miss? A gag?
It happened.
It did, eh? Well, now suppose you tell me your version.
I was standing in the park, and I looked up, and there it was.
Describe it.
It was beautiful. It was golden with a dusty finish, like an unripe Concord grape. It made a faint sound, a chord of two tones, and it circled over my head like some great round hummingbird.
Go on.
Well, other people must have seen it because they were all looking at me and pointing. I saw one man cross himself. And then it came down and touched me and spoke to me.
This flying saucer spoke to you?
Yes.
And just what did it say to you? I said, what did it say?
I can't tell you.
A secret, huh?
Yes.
I see. Connolly, this girl is for Bellevue.
Well, Sergeant, the plain fact is that it happened just like that. And 10 witnesses all agree it did.
Are you trying to tell me that there was such a thing as this whirring hummingbird of a saucer?
Oh, there was that, Sergeant.
And just how do you know, Connolly?
Well, we've got the thing out in the squad car.
You what?
Bennett's bringing it in right now, see? About 36 inches across it is. And covered with strange markings.
Great, Mother. Did you call the bomb squad?
I didn't think of it.
Well, think of it, man. This may be some kind of atomic weapon.
I'll turn it over to ballistics.
Never mind about ballistics. Call the FBI and tell them we've got this thing.
Yes, sir. What about the girl?
We'll book her on disturbing the peace. I've got a feeling the government men may want a word with her.
Sergeant.
What is it, Benitez?
I'd like to do a story on this for my paper. Could I have a look at the saucer?
We'd better clear it first.
Well, could I talk to the girl?
After she's been booked.
Connolly, is the crowd still up at the park?
Very likely.
Well, I'll run up there and get some eyewitnesses. Then I'd like to come back and talk to the girl.
Up at the park, they were still buzzing about it. Some said she was a communist agitator. Some said it was a flying saucer from Mars and she had stepped out of it. Others said she was a saint and it was her halo. I took some notes, phoned the paper, and went back downtown to talk to her. But there were a couple of agents with her, and they wouldn't let me in.
Now then, miss, you told the sergeant this saucer spoke to you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did it speak to you in English?
I don't know.
You did understand it, though?
Yes.
Do you speak any other languages?
No.
Tell me, what message did you receive from this instrument?
Wasn't anything, really.
Suppose you tell me.
I'd rather not.
Miss, let me be very frank. I'm not a policeman. I'm a security agent. That means that I deal with problems that affect the security of our country. Do you understand?
Yes.
Now, we've examined this flying saucer enough to know that it is not of American manufacture. It also possesses an extremely high radioactive count. Now, that means that it was made in an area where radioactive materials are in great abundance, such as an area where atom bombs are made. That's why we want to know the message you received from the saucer.
There was no message.
You just made it up.
Yes.
I'm afraid you're lying. Suppose we have some soldiers bring the saucer in here and hold it over your head. Would you object?
I don't care what you do.
All right, boys, bring it in. Now, when I tell the men to hold it over your head, you try to recall what it said.
I don't know what it said.
Lift it up, boys. Hold it right over her head.
All right.
It's talking to you now, isn't it?
Yes.
What is it saying? What did it say? All right, boys, crate it up and send it down to the National Research Laboratories.
Right. What about the girl, sir?
We'll get nothing out of her. I don't believe she really knows what that humming noise is. Better have a psychiatrist examine her.
Yes, sir.
It's took her to the city hospital, and she had a room to herself. Whenever the door opened, she could see the policeman outside. The door opened quite often. There were a lot of important people, some in army uniforms, who came up from Washington just to see her and talk to her. Apparently, they had analyzed the flying saucer and discovered something that made this girl about the most important person in the country. I used to stand outside, and I could identify the heads of certain security agencies, but nobody would answer the questions that the reporters shot at them.
Sir, excuse me?
Yes?
I'm Jason Benayades from the Trib. I've been assigned to this flying saucer story as chief of the security...
I'm sorry, I have no comment.
Can you tell me how long the girl will be held?
That's a matter for the civil authorities.
Well, have the psychiatrist...
Excuse me, Mr. Benayades. My car's waiting.
A few days later, she was released from the hospital and returned to the court to be tried on the disorderly conduct charge. They found her guilty and fined her $15 and turned her loose. When she walked out of the courtroom, she was handed a subpoena to appear before a congressional committee in private session. She answered all their questions except one. My paper sent me over to cover the hearings.
Now, young lady, I want to remind you that I'm a senator of the United States and empowered by the people of this country to ask questions relating to matters of security. You understand?
Yes.
Your name is Janet Boyce, is it not?
I told you that.
Now, at an earlier session, you testified that as a young girl, you were a member of a certain organization in your neighborhood. Would you name it?
The Rinky Dinks.
Who comprised the Rinky Dinks, Miss Boyce?
It was just a bunch of girls who got together to play field hockey and listen to recordings.
Any particular recordings?
Mostly Eddie Fisher.
I see. Now, this flying saucer, you said it talked to you. You did say that, didn't you?
Yes.
And then you denied it?
Yes.
Why?
Because I was tired of answering questions.
Young woman, let me put something to you squarely. Oh, by the way, I think if there are members of the press here, I can divulge a rather spectacular piece of information to you. This flying saucer has been thoroughly examined and analyzed, and I wish to inform the people of this great nation that it definitely, I repeat, it definitely did not originate on this planet. Now then, Miss Boyce, consider that it is possible that our Earth might be attacked from outer space by beings much stronger and cleverer than we are. And consider that perhaps you have the key to our defense against those beings. Don't you owe it to the world?
I don't think I owe anything to anybody.
Even if the Earth was not attacked, just think what an advantage it would give this country over its enemies. Young woman, I ask you, what did that flying saucer say to you? Do you know that what you're doing is tantamount to working for the enemies of your country? I will give you one more chance. What was the message?
It was personal.
Gentlemen, I move that Miss Janet Boyce be cited for contempt.
The furor was fantastic. The chief of security blasted the senator for divulging secret information about the origin of the flying saucer, and the senator said the people had a right to know, and besides, he was just guessing anyway, and happened to guess right. Meanwhile, the press printed the girl's picture all over the front page and ran banner headlines such as, "Girl refuses to betray Martian secrets. Flying saucer girl won't talk, cited for contempt." The contempt trial was equally spectacular. She didn't plead any amendment or anything. She just said the saucer was talking to her, and it was nobody else's business. She was convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison.
Benayades. Yes, Chief. For the Sunday supplement? What, do you think there's anything in it? Okay, whatever you say. Mike, get me everything you can on that flying saucer girl, will you? Yeah, the one that was sent to jail about 4 years ago. See if you can find out what she's doing now. She was released about 6 months ago, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah, the boss wants a feature for the Sunday supplement. Okay.
I found out she had gotten a job cleaning at night in offices and stores down near the beachfront. There weren't many to clean, but that meant there weren't many people to remember her face from the newspapers. I tracked her down and caught up with her in a one-armed coffee joint about 4 in the morning. Excuse me, miss. Do you mind if I sit here?
No.
Nice night, isn't it? Moonlight and everything.
Which are you? Security, newspapers, or just somebody out for a good time?
You're pretty bitter, aren't you?
Shouldn't I be?
Yeah, I guess you should. My name is Jason Berniades. I'm with the newspaper.
It's been nice meeting you. I have to go now.
Just a minute.
Please.
I can't blame you.
How did you find me?
One of the leg men located your mother. I talked to her earlier tonight.
Oh. How is she?
Still hitting the bottle. The way she knew where you were, you sent her some flowers on her birthday, remember?
Yes. She wouldn't talk to me. Said she didn't want a daughter who was a jailbird.
Tell me how it's been.
So you can write about it?
I promise you I won't write anything you don't want me to write.
Okay. You want to know how it's been? Right after I got out of jail, I met a man at a restaurant. Nice man. He asked me for a date. I spent every cent I had on a red handbag to go with my red shoes. They weren't the same shade, but anyway, they were both red. And I was very excited about the date. We went to a movie. Afterward, he didn't even try to kiss me or anything. He just wanted to know what the flying saucer had told me. Didn't say anything. I just went home and cried all night.
And that was it?
No. I had another date. I get pretty lonely. This time they arrested the man I was with. He was a Russian agent. On Christmas Eve, 4 men called me up and sang me a song. Would you like to hear the words?
It doesn't matter.
They go, the flying saucer came down one day and taught her a brand new way to play. And what it was, she will not say. But she takes me out of this world.
I'm sorry.
Now will you go away and leave me alone?
Yes.
Aren't you going to ask me the big question?
No.
Everybody does.
No, well, not me.
You will, sooner or later.
Maybe. Look, can I take you home?
No.
Can I see you again? Please.
I don't know. I'm afraid to let myself like anyone.
Trust me, will you?
I'm not sure.
Maybe.
Maybe.
I'll wait here for you tomorrow night.
All right.
The next night, I went back to the coffee joint to wait for her. I knew she got through about 4 in the morning. I got there about 15 minutes early.
Mr. Benides?
Yes. Say, you're the chief of the security section, aren't you?
You have a good memory. You mind if I sit down?
Well, I'm expecting someone.
Yes, I know.
Oh, I see.
I'd like to talk to you.
Go ahead.
You probably know that we've been trying to gain the confidence of this girl for some years now.
Yes.
And, apparently you've succeeded where we've failed, right?
Not really.
In any event, you seem to be making some progress.
She may not even show up.
I think she will. Now, I'm going to ask you to help us.
Help? In what way can I help?
We have reason to believe that this girl is a courier for some alien power.
On what do you base that?
Well, there was the incident of the saucer, of course. We've definitely established that it came from some other planet. And recently, she's been throwing messages inside bottles into the ocean.
What sort of messages?
They're always the same. I have one right here. You're welcome to read it and see if it makes any sense. We've had every decoding expert in the service trying to break it.
but we can't seem to find the key.
I see.
Now, she's thrown literally hundreds of these messages in bottles into the sea. We've got many of them, but not all, naturally. Now, what we're most interested in is locating the contact.
Naturally.
And that's where you fit in. We'd like you to gain this girl's confidence even further. Try to find out just what these messages mean, and beyond that, what the saucer said to her. You'll be doing us a favor and your country a great service.
You're certain this is some subversive activity on her part?
How else can you explain the fact that she won't tell us her secret?
Maybe because it's hers, and everybody has a right to have something of his own.
Are you, trying to tell me that you won't cooperate?
I didn't say that.
I'd like to remind you, Mr. Benaides, that you have a duty to us.
I know that. I also have a duty to myself and to God. If you'll excuse me. I folded the bottle message and put it in my pocket. I waited for her to show up. The minutes went by, and the hours, and I knew she wasn't coming. Or she had come and seen me with the chief and changed her mind. That's when I left the cafe and walked down to the beach. That's when I dragged her out of the surf before she could follow one of her bottles into the water. How do you feel now? Are you cold?
Why should you care?
I do.
Is that why you were sitting with the security chief in the cafe?
I didn't arrange that meeting. He asked me to spy on you.
I suppose he told you about the bottles.
Yes.
Wonder how much of the taxpayers' money they spent gathering them up. I think they'd get tired of it. All the writing in the bottles is the same.
Maybe you could have saved a lot of trouble.
Do you think so? All of them. Judges, jailers, jukeboxes. People. Do you really think it would have saved me a minute's trouble if I told them the whole truth at the very beginning?
Wouldn't it?
No. They wouldn't have believed me. What they wanted was a new weapon. Some super scientific, super science from some alien super race. Science. That's all they think of.
Yeah, it's pretty important.
Would it ever have occurred to them that this super race from another planet might have super feelings? Or super longings? Super loneliness? No. All they think about is weapons. Isn't it time you asked me what the saucer said?
No.
They all ask me.
I don't have to ask you. I know.
You know?
Let me read it to you. There is in certain living souls a quality of loneliness unspeakable. So great it must be shared as company is shared by lesser beings. Such a loneliness is mine. So know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
How did you know?
It's the message you put in the bottles. The same message that some lonely, strange being in some other world put into a bottle, only his bottle was a flying saucer and sent across space to you.
You knew.
I'm lonely too. Look at me. I've never had the love of a woman. They think I'm pretty ugly.
You're not ugly.
No. I don't feel ugly right now.
Say it again. The message from the saucer.
Know by this that in immensity there is one lonelier than you.
I wonder if whoever first wrote it has found someone.
I think perhaps he has. She looked at me and said nothing. But it was as if a light came from her. More light than even the practiced moon could cast. Among the many things it meant was the fact that even to loneliness there is an end for those who are lonely enough, long enough.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features I Am a Nucleus by Stephen Barr, the story of a man who felt he was hexed because his comfortably untidy world had suddenly turned into a monstrosity of order. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought to you Saucer of Loneliness, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Theodore Sturgeon and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were Elaine Ross as Janet, Nat Polan as Jason, William Keane as the sergeant, Jock McGregor as the cop, Mandel Kramer as the chief, and Wendell Holmes as the senator. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. And, of course, it didn't give away the ending. But now you know, because you just heard it. Now, when this was first published in 1953, Theodore Sturgeon's 13-page short story packed a wallop every bit as powerful as other literary critiques of the degeneration of the spirit of democracy and personal freedom in America during the era of McCarthyism, which is the backdrop, of course, of the environment in which this story occurred. You know, it can be an allegory also, of course, such as The Crucible by Arthur Miller or Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451 as well. It does it sort of in miniature. For all that, the concentration of it moves the emotions of the reader totally unexpectedly and creates a whole new vision of the two principal characters at the end than what you started out with. His storytelling has the organic development that makes people forget where they are or that they have any other concerns than the character in the imagined world that they're reading about, no matter, you know, how fictional and out of place that it would be in your everyday world. Now, this story had such an impact on those that read it that they decided to put it into a Twilight episode. And the TV adaptation differed from the short story in several aspects, mostly due to TV storytelling requirements, obviously. The woman's loneliness, revealed only gradually in the short story, is obvious from the beginning in the episode. The time frame, of course, is shorter, and the resolution, or the orb, is missing in the short story. In that plot, Margaret is a lonely waitress who seems to enjoy spending her time walking on the beach. When she returns home after work one night, her mother berates her for being alone at her age and that she should be married. Margaret just wanders into her bedroom and cries herself to sleep. The next day, Margaret is walking to work on a sunny day when a crowd at the beach notices a flying saucer. It wanders around as if looking for someone, and it follows Margaret and apparently communicates with her, but then she passes out. She awakens, telling everyone that it spoke to her. She also explains that the saucer specifically wanted to tell her a message, but she doesn't reveal what the message was, saying it was private. Later on, the government determines that the saucer, which ended up being confiscated, was empty, and the only proof of anything about it is a mysterious alloy of the hull, which is unknown. Of course, that goes hand in hand with the fear mongering that occurred during that time of the McCarthyism era. You can see that correlation. Now, Margaret's mother becomes furious and throws her out. After finding a place to live, Margaret returns to the beach as if searching for something. And on the busy boardwalk, she's approached by people who think Jesus came through the saucer to Margaret. Boy, that's not too far off the mark from some stories we hear in the news today. But anyway, that none other than Jesus comes through the saucer to Margaret and wants her to heal their son. She runs away crying, unable to explain. Margaret then writes notes in the bottles and throws them into the ocean. The note starts with, "To the loneliest one." At work, a patron asks Margaret for a date, and she agrees. Margaret gets all dressed up with new clothes and starts to enjoy her date. He then asks about the message and wants to know what it was. And Margaret, of course, becomes upset and keeps saying that it was private and not for anyone else to hear. Then she storms out and she goes home. Apparently desperate and without hope, Margaret walks along the beach and decides to just end it all. She walks out into the ocean, but suddenly a man comes from behind her and pulls her out. He explains that he found one of the bottles and the message meant something to him. She tells him it was the only thing that she could call her own and the only thing she could do for someone else. He says that when he read it, he knew it was connected to the saucer and the words were like a song. And she says that the saucer was not a weapon or anything, just an interstellar message in a bottle, just like her bottles thrown into the ocean. But she admits that the message were her words, not the message from the saucer, exactly. So she reveals the actual message from the saucer to him as a small glowing orb in the palm of her hand. They both caress the orb in their four hands and then it disappears. Margaret and the man walk off arm and arm. Now, at that time, you would look at the fact that, she was a representative of something that was a threat to the state. In real time, you had the McCarthyism hearings, and you had people that were turning other people in. We had actors who literally turned in other actors for being subversives. Those people never got work again in many cases, so that was a very realistic threat going on. There was people put in jail for, having political dissension or aberrant thoughts, and in that story, exactly that happened. She goes from job to job hoping not to be recognized too soon, and every so often, she meets these nice-seeming men who would court her, but they always end up showing their true cards by asking her about what that saucer told her. They wanted to know what was going on inside her head. These men were not interested in her, but the potential power she kept locked up in her mind. And some of these pretend courters are agents of foreign powers, as well as being agents of her own government, just as the men tailing them are sometimes fifth columnists and sometimes legitimate men of national security. To escape the craziness that her life had become, where she was, intellectually and emotionally malnourished by society's irrational fears, lust for power, and, craving for scandal, have all but been sort of focused upon her, and she moves into a sparsely populated coast where she sets up a house cleaning business. You see, this would be basically what would happen to you during that period of time in our society. And some would say there are those that are in the public eye and our politics that, not getting too pointed here with the discussion, wouldn't mind having those days come back. Thinking outside the box, it's wrong. And so in the inner aspect of this story, of course, artists spend a lot of time alone creating, and being an artist in our society kind of makes us lonely, some would say, and so they communicate through their art, and this is the only way that these people could really express themselves during that time, hence writing the story using the message in the bottle as their communication that, you're not alone. You don't have to be by yourself. You're not the only person who thinks this way. So this story had an awful lot more meaning and more impact to those who read it at the time, especially those that were within the art and the arts community, sort of a hush-hush thing that if you didn't agree with those powers to be. And even today, you know, to begin creating from our pain eventually engenders compassion for our small and groping lives. Out of this broken state, there comes a tenderness for the cement below our feet, the dried grass cracking in the terrible wind. We can touch the things around us we once thought ugly and see their special detail, the peeling paint and the gray of shadows, as they are, simply what they are, not bad, just a part of life around us, and basically become connected to the love of life. In this this story, her throwing that line out there, casting a line of communication, and somebody responding to it, was basically what we have had to do in many oppressive societies is, you know, you have your sub-networks, and that is part of the human experience. And whenever there's oppression, there's always going to be the subversive network that's going to say, hey, you know, I don't think like that group. So, anyway, very interesting story, and at the very end of The Twilight Zone, it was interesting. His fantastic, you know, conclusions at the end of the each show, of course, are classic and genius. He says, "Message in a bottle, sender unknown, still alive or long dead, the last of his species or a traveler marooned on alien shores. Perhaps in the end, all that matters is this, that even to loneliness, there is an end. And for those who are lonely enough, long enough, a message cast adrift on the darkest beaches of the Twilight Zone." Anyway, I guess that brings us to the beach of the end of this episode of Savage Science Radio. I'd like to thank Nick Palucco for his fantastic show graphics, and Dennis Bond and Hawk Production for that wonderful intro we use every single week, get us revved up for the show, and my wonderful executive producer, Todd Sheets, here at Jackalope 105 FM, and until we meet again, happy trails, and keep your powder and your pants dry.
Thank you.